Israel internally. On the flight, Ovitz tried to assuage Roth's concerns. "I wanted him to be clear," Ovitz later testified, "because I knew he would be fearful of me getting involved in the movie business, and I didn't blame him because I had very strong ties to the filmmakers, having been their agent. And I assured him that I wasn't going to attempt to get in his way of making movies, that I was there to assist him in any way that I could, and that I would make myself available as a resource to him and to try to allay his concerns about my joining the company." On Sunday evening, Eisner asked Ovitz to stop by his house in Bel Air to go over the press release and to discuss how they'd handle the next morning's announcement. Ovitz arrived in good spirits, energized by his new deal and the resolution of his future career direction. Who knew what the future held? If all went well, he himself might be Disney's chief executive in a few years, reaching the pinnacle of an already remarkable Hollywood career. But the minute he walked into Eisner's dining room, where he and his wife had shared so many pleasant meals with Michael and Jane, he knew something was wrong. What had obviously been an animated conversation came to a halt. Eisner was seated on the left side of the table. Standing at one end of the room was John Dreyer, the head of public relations. Ovitz had expected to see him since they were reviewing the press release. But seated across the table from Eisner was Sandy Litvak and Steve Bollenbach, the chief financial officer. Bollenbach glared at Ovitz and said, "Welcome to the company. I just want you to know that I'll never work for you." Then Litvak chimed in, "Me too. I'm not going to report to you." Ovitz was stunned. He waited for Eisner to come to his defense. "I had no idea that those statements would be made. They were made aggressively and in a way that was, in my opinion, disrespectful," Ovitz later testified. But in the ensuing awkward silence, Eisner said nothing. Ovitz, proclaimed the most powerful man in Hollywood, felt helpless. Eisner had delayed telling Bollenbach about Ovitz's hiring until that afternoon, adding, "Don't worry, you continue to report to me." Bollenbach's contract provided that if he reported to anyone but Eisner, he'd be granted an additional 150,000 Disney shares. In any event, Eisner later testified that he had never intended to have the chief financial officer report to Ovitz, even though the CFO had reported to Wells. "I wanted to keep a rein on the finances of the company until I had confidence that Mr. Ovitz had adapted to a public company," he testified. And he said he was kind of impressed at the way Bollenbach confronted Ovitz that night. Eisner also testified that he told Ovitz while they were in Aspen that the chief financial officer wouldn't report to Ovitz. "I had told Michael that Steve had this contractual commitment to report to me. On this weekend, he accepted that the CFO would report to me. Mr. Ovitz knew from day one that Mr. Bollenbach was going to report to me directly." In his book, Eisner concedes that he promised that all operating divisions, except animation, would report to Ovitz. Ovitz testified that Eisner had never said anything about Bollenbach not reporting to him, and that he considered legal and financial to be among the operating divisions that would report to him, as they had to Frank Wells. Litvak was another story. Eisner was surprised that Litvak followed Bollenbach's lead. "I kind of avoided dealing with that in my own mind," Eisner later said about whether